Succession number 4602, reel number 5.
Brigadier Sherman, reel 5. How long before war broke out had you been aware that it might do so?
Oh, I think we were all aware that war was imminent. But we didn't take any particular note of this, other than the fact that we thought we would be involved in any operations as a force wherever hostilities broke out. My own personal problem was that I was due to go home on leave at the end of August in 1939, terminal paid leave for the termination of my contract in November 1939. But because of the imminence of war breaking out, my replacement, who was then a regular serving officer with the British Army in Haifa, was withdrawn as a candidate to replace me, despite the fact that we'd already had preliminary exchanges as to what he would take over when he joined us. And the fact that his appointment to replace me was cancelled at the 11th hour, my secondment to the Colonial Office was indefinitely extended by a curt cable from the War Office. On the very day in which the British officers were giving me my farewell guest night, the adjutant came up to me well after midnight. We were due to leave Zirka the next morning at 6 o'clock to go down to Port Said. And he came up well after midnight, just as we were going home, and said, "I shouldn't set your heart on going home tomorrow. You may not do so." And I didn't believe him. And then later on, I think I was about the only one whose secondment was indefinitely extended, because later on, those regular officers who completed their secondment could be replaced fairly easily by the posting authorities in the Middle East. But there was a great desire amongst the regular officers during the Phoney War, when there were no hostilities in the Middle East, to try to get back to their regiments. And if their contracts had not expired, or were not due to expire for some time, various subterfuges had to be contrived, such as going to the Staff College in Haifa. And once you had passed the staff college, as there was only one staff appointment at that time in the Transjordan Front Force, they had to leave the force to be employed elsewhere.
Was that quite a general attitude among the officers of the force when the war broke out?
In the early part of the war, yes, because there were, as I say, there were no hostilities, don't forget, in the Middle East until about June 1940. And there was an obvious desire amongst regular officers to get into the fray. Later on, there wasn't such a big problem. But certain appointments, and mine was one of them, had to be so carefully selected that one almost had to find one's own relief, and that's just what I did. And then present him to the commanding officer to see whether he was acceptable.
What differences did the outbreak of war make in 1939 to the organisation of the force, if any?
Well, there was a big expansion. We formed one additional mechanised squadron called F Squadron, my particular role in that was that I had to purchase all the vehicles and build all the bodies and equip the whole force. And we did it within about 9 months. We also had to. We also formed what was called an LFC Guards Squadron. This was not mechanized in the true sense of the word, because it was a series of static units employed all along the pipeline, the oil pipeline from the Iraqi frontier right through to Haifa. And we had static units in all the pumping stations. But, of course, there had to be some transport running between the two, but there were not a fully mechanized infantry company. They were guard troops.
Did you have any particular problems re-equipping a mechanized squadron with the war on?
We had a lot of problems in this sense that the vehicles I wanted had to come from America, and we had no dollars and had to fall back on the Arab or business world in Palestine to supply the funds from their American sterling balances in America. This made it a fairly costly exercise, but it worked.
Was it quite easy to do?
I don't think we had any major problems. The real problem was that the shipping of these vehicles from America had to be carried out within the civilian business world, which was run by the Arabs. And so one never knew for certain until you actually took delivery of the vehicle at the port of Basra in Iraq as to whether you were going to get them or not, or as to how long they were going to take to get to you. They usually came via India.
How well equipped was the Transjordan Frontier Force by the outbreak of war?
Well, it was up to strength. Its equipment was totally unsuited to the type of war that was being waged in Europe. We had no armour or anything like that. We were very definitely a type of desert patrol. The cavalry regiment were extremely useful in the Syrian campaign, because that was quite clearly horse country. And the mechanized regiment did, in fact, take part in that campaign and went up through Damascus and over the sort of desert up to Homs and Hama before the Vichy French had an armistice. But it was largely, I think, a cavalry war.
Was the Transjordan Frontier Force still carrying on its patrols in the desert at this time?
Yes, of course we had to reduce these considerably, but their main role in the war afterwards was to protect the frontiers of Syria and Iraq. And the gaining of intelligence from Turkey by having troops all along the Turkish frontier. The fact that the Tourist Express went in and out of Jordan and Turkey, one used to take the train and pick up newspapers or anything you could find, and very often you found Germans in these trains.
Was there any difference in the operations in Palestine with the outbreak of war?
The disturbances virtually collapsed, and there was an agreed armistice throughout the war within Palestine. There was no Arab Jewish rebellion. From the time that hostilities came to the Middle East to the end of the war.
Was there any particular reaction among the local troops to the news of outbreak of war in Europe?
Initially, I don't think there was. It became more acute in as a result of a propaganda war, the German propaganda war in 40-41, when I think I recorded we had the problem of the mutiny when our mechanized squadron from Marne joined Habfors to relieve Baghdad.
Did the fall of France and Italy's entry into the war make any difference to the Transjordan Frontier Force's position and role?
It didn't alter the position at all. It made it far more acute. I think one has to remember that we were at that time, when I say we, it's the United Kingdom government and the Western Allies, were firstly involved in the Vichy French versus the Free French, and obviously we were trying to get the Free French into Syria and the Lebanon, and of course later on we had to protect Persia from being taken over by the Germans, and we had the supply route when Russia came in, the supply route from Russia through Persia, Iraq, down to the Middle East, where the Polish divisions came through. And I suppose one of the biggest roles my workshop side had to deal with was, in fact, that movement, which lasted nearly 18 months to 2 years, of the flow of Polish refugees from Russia through Persia, where they assembled into some form of military organization and then drove across the desert through Iraq, down the pipeline road into Palestine and down into the Western Desert, where they formed the Polish Corps, which did so well in the Casino. It's a battle in Italy later on. And the role of the Transjordan Frontier Force workshop element was repair and recovery for the whole of that LFC from Rutba in Iraq down to Turkam in Palestine. And I had recovery vehicles and recovery stations about every 30 to 40 miles. And at one period I had attached to me a complete Indian divisional workshop under my command, plus an Australian light recovery section.
When the government of Syria declared for Vichy, was there any defection of French troops over the border?
There always had been. Much of the French colonial army, and they were the colonial army there, were Free French and anti-Vichy. And quite a large contingent came across when we first went into Syria in 1941. But we'd had a number of defections, not to us, but they were able to come into Palestine and Transjordan over the frontier and join the Free French forces in the Western Desert.
When the Rashid Ali revolt broke out in Iraq in 1941, what was the role of the Transjordan Frontier Force?
Well, there was a column called Habfors, which was formed, consisted, I think, of a British cavalry regiment, an Indian an independent Indian infantry company, some Australians, and a mechanized squadron of the Transjordan Frontier Force with the Arab Legion. It was at that time the Crown Prince of Iraq, or was he the king? I can't remember exactly. I think he may have been the king. Yes, he was the king. Young Faisal, King Faisal of Iraq, King Fuad of Iraq, was it? Fuad, I think. And Nuri Said Pasha, who was subsequently murdered much later on, if you will recall, were in fact living in Zirka, waiting to get back to Baghdad. And we were going to put him there. And that's what Hab Force was all about. The only available mechanized squadron was the one that had been down in Marne, virtually in a peacetime role, and therefore susceptible to all the German propaganda in Arabic about Arabs shouldn't shed the blood of fellow Arabs and all the rest of it. And they had been very politically indoctrinated, but there was little one could do about it, despite warnings from some of the Arab officers that they were doubtful as to their loyalty. In fact, they were perfectly all right until we got just over the borders of Transjordan and Iraq, when that particular squadron, one of the officers, led a mutiny, in the sense that he said that his contract of service under the mandate for government of Palestine and Transjordan did not permit him to be used on operations outside the frontiers of Transjordan and Palestine without the specific mandate of the High Commissioner, which had not been given. And they refused to go beyond Rukba. They had to be withdrawn. My workshop detachment that had been servicing the whole of Hab Force's mechanical column also had to be withdrawn and were very, very upset. They were doing a marvellous job. They were thoroughly enjoying themselves, if you can enjoy yourselves in wartime. They had been looking forward to this sort of operation, and when they were forcibly withdrawn, they became very disappointed.
What was their attitude to the Iraq revolt?
They wanted to go on. They were the only difficult problem was that one mechanized squadron down in Marne. There was no problem in the cavalry regiment, no sign of mutiny, no sign of discontent. Similarly, the other two mechanized squadrons, one of which was in the Jordan Valley and the other was up in the north of Transjordan, there was no problem at all. But when we withdrew, or had to withdraw, this squadron, it was thought expedient to have a thorough comb out of all possible malcontents right throughout the frontier force. And so for some months we were non-operational while this was going on. And it wasn't until the outbreak, the invasion of Syria and the operations being planned for that really took root, that we came back into the operational field. And they put up an extremely good show on the invasion of Syria.
Who were the people most affected by the comb-out of the Transjordan Frontier Force?
It's difficult to say. We knew from the intelligence sources in Palestine as to which of the villages were doubtful and where the German propaganda had had most effect. And so one had to comb through the whole of the Frontier Force to find what soldiers we had from those affected areas. And if there was any doubt at all as to their loyalty, they were discharged.
How did this affect your workshops unit?
It didn't affect my workshop at all. Not at all. We had a complete operational role the whole time because we were in support of the British Army and all the LFC throughout Transjordan right from the beginning to the end of the war. So we were fully involved. I think the only problem was that we had this body of Arab soldiery doing absolutely nothing in the southern deserts of Transjordan except listen to the radio.
Was the radio the chief means of German propaganda?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Did the local troops listen to British radio at the same time or not?
I don't think we had much propaganda radio in that sense. This, you must remember, was being beamed from Baghdad by the, I think it was called the Golden Triangle. Rashid Ali and his Golden Triangle.
When the invasion of Syria took place, what role did the Transjordan Frontier Force play then?
Well, the cavalry regiment went up the coast. No, they didn't go up the coast. They went up with an Indian cavalry regiment through from Safed northwards, were involved in the siege of Damascus, and then went on right up to the Turkish frontier. The mechanized regiment also went up through Damascus and then, if you like, turned right and secured the whole of the Euphrates right down to the Iraqi frontier, right down to Deir ez-Zor. And virtually took over the administration from the Vichy French of that area of Syria that was in the desert. From Aleppo eastwards to Deir ez-Zor, the whole of the Euphrates Valley.
Before the invasion took place, were any Frenchmen attached to the headquarters of the Transjordan Frontier Force?
No. This would have been far too dangerous.
How did all these operations, apart from the repair and recovery service, affect the workshops of the Transjordan Frontier Force during the war?
Oh, we had a massive expansion of our workshops, both the base element at Zirka, which was extended considerably, and we also built a second workshop at Mafraq. We had a light aid detachment for the mechanized regiment, and we had a large fitters element to look after the mechanical transport of the cavalry regiment. At the outbreak of war, the workshop establishment was one British officer and two British warrant officers. And by the time I left, there were five British officers, four British warrant officers, and additionally a technical adjutant, and with a light aid detachment in the mechanized regiment, which of course was under my command technically.
Was there a corresponding increase in recruitment of local officers?
Not recruitment of local officers. There was an increase in the commissioning of suitable non-commissioned officers. And, of course, so far as the workshop element was concerned, these were largely from the Christian Arab element. In fact, I had no Muslim Arab officer in the workshops at all. I had one Jew and three Christians and an Assyrian.
Were there any other ways in which the war affected the organization of the Transjordan Frontier Force in general?
We had to fit in with the overall army communications organization. In other words, my workshops form part of the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers' general responsibility for repair, maintenance, overhaul, and everything else throughout Palestine and Transjordan as far as Iraq. We formed a very large element of it. Of course, we were not allowed to be dictated to, in the sense that if the if Headquarters Palestine, Rimi element, wanted us to go and form a recovery unit in the middle of Iraq somewhere, we told them they could go and get stuffed. Well, not quite like that, but this was outside our role. We were not allowed to go beyond the role that had been laid down by the High Commission in Palestine. Again, this was largely for fear that there might be, although in fact there never was in the workshop, there might be some politically minded within the organization who would quote the Palestine government ordinance as to what his contract of service entailed.
After the mutiny by the unit which had been at Marn, did you find there was a difference in attitude to the political motivations of the troops?
I think in the main, the vast majority of them wanted to redeem their name, and there was no question of them ever being disloyal.
Did it affect the way that the British officers now looked on their local troops?
I don't think so at all. The offending elements having been removed, including one British officer, he was not removed for disloyalty, but he was removed for not handling the thing in the way that was thought he should have done.
And in general, did you find that the training which the Transjordan Frontier Force had done in peacetime had suited it for its role during the war, or different roles during the war?
No, we had to do a lot of retraining. I think you must remember that before the war we were engaged entirely in internal rebellions within Palestine, a type of terrorist war, we call it now. Quite different to normal military or orthodox military operations. We were no longer just a patrolling force, or, if you like, a sophisticated gendarmerie, which is possibly what the cavalry regiment were before the war, a very heavily armed gendarmerie. We were definitely, as far as the two regiments, cavalry and mechanized, were concerned, become part of an offensive military force, albeit, as far as the mechanized side was concerned, very limited in weaponry and equipment.
What sort of training did this entail?
The first, well, I can only really speak from Nicanor's side, as I think I have mentioned earlier when you were asking me about what sort of connections we had with the Arab Legion before the war and during the war. We too had to develop a gunnery element, and we had 25 pounders, which this is a very sophisticated bit of equipment for an Arab force suddenly to be presented with, and particularly as these had to be carried on a truck. It was not a case of towing behind a sophisticated tracked vehicle, as was happening in the Western Desert. These things, we had to design a system of portee for these, and they became very effective. But it took a lot of training and devising tactics and drills which had never been thought of. And they were very specific to the 300 Infantry Force too. Well, another difference that the war made was that from approximately 1941 onwards, the Infantry Force was no longer employed within the frontiers of Palestine and Transjordan. Only the base elements were left in Transjordan itself. The two regiments were employed in Syria and the Lebanon and on the borders of Iraq.
How long did you yourself remain in Zirka?
I left in 1943.
And what was your general impression of the role which the Transjordan Frontier Force had played during your time there, in peacetime and in war?
I think we were a very valuable asset to the general military resources of that area.